Scripture reading will be from Luke 2, 41 through 50. Every year his parents went to Jerusalem for the feast of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the feast according to their custom. After the feast was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they traveled for one day. Then they began looking for him among the relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard them was amazed at his understanding of and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxious searching for you." "Why were you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know that I had been in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he was saying to them.
Good morning. I wanted to start first by encouraging you, if you are a member of this congregation and you are interested in ways that we can serve our community, I would really encourage you guys to be a part of this, the Cornucopia Community Garden event next Saturday. It's only from 9 to noon. It's just light gardening. Thomas went last time and he survived. He's saying he didn't, but he did. He had a great time. He was telling me just how much he loved it and how much it changed his life. And so I can take allowances. I'm the one preaching. I really want to encourage you to be a part of these community outreach events. As a leadership and as just a member of this congregation, I want to find ways that we can serve, the ways that we can get outside of this building and show others that we love them in any way possible. And I know that many of us are already doing amazing acts of service. I am so encouraged. And I hope you guys are hearing as Karen and Carolyn are ministering to these women that we have so many people here that are already acting as missionaries. And I want to encourage the rest of you, if you are sitting and you are wondering how I can serve, how I can be a part of the ministries here at this church, please talk to me or Dave, to any of the leadership, to any of the elders, to any of the deacons, and we would love to put you to work. That is our job, to put you to work. And so some of that may be gardening. Others, it might be just cleaning a house. We want to find in some real way that we can reach out to others, to people who are lost, to people who are searching for Jesus, because we want to go on mission with Christ into Ventura. And so again, it's next Saturday. It's at the Cornucopia Community Garden. It's here in Ventura. It's from 9 to 11. They have all the tools. They're going to bring all the water. They just need us to show up and to work and to somehow impact this community that we're in. We're going to be in Luke chapter 2. And I want to discuss a very odd question. And this question first came to me back in 2003. They were simpler times. It was way back when. I was 18 years old, if you can imagine that, because I can't. This was before I met Natalie, so this is pre-Natalie. This is back when I was still a questionable person. And I was a part of this program called Adventures in Missions. If you've never heard of it, it is a crazy program. It is a missionary apprentice program. Many of you have heard, or many of you have seen Nick. Nick Schroeder was a part of this. My wife was a part of this. It is a two-year-long program that you submit yourself to. And the hard submitting part is you have to spend 8 months of that time in Lubbock, Texas. Right, so it's difficult. You learn a lot about Jesus submitting into Lubbock, Texas. But I learned to love the place. I learned to accept it. You know, I learned to submit to God. And it was an incredible experience for me. It absolutely changed my life. After the 8 months in Lubbock, Texas, you go to a mission field for a year to a year and a half. And that can be anywhere around the globe. I've had friends go to Mito, Japan, Strasbourg, France. Natalie went to Juneau, Alaska. I went to Bozeman, Montana. And one of the mission fields was in Mexico City. Mexico City is a city of 28 million people. And so in February of 2003, the entire AIM class flew to Mexico City to experience what it would be like to be in a different culture, different language. No one understands you. No one speaks English. And it is there I had my first revelation, and that is tacos al pastor. I have to mention this because they are a gift from God. If you have not had one, you need to have one. It is incredible. It is a beautiful place. And I remember as I was flying into Mexico City, it was at night, and it was like nothing I've ever seen before. Many of us have flown into LAX. And flying into LAX, you can spot where the mountains are because those are the dark spots on the ground. Everywhere else is lit up, and it is beautiful. In Mexico City, everybody lives everywhere. So as you are flying, and you have to imagine this, it was an incredible view, because we'd been flying for several hours over overcast sky, and it looked like the ground was on fire for as far as the eye could see. And so as we descended through the clouds, it's almost indescribable. There was lights everywhere. You could see the contours of the earth. You could see where the hills are, where the mountains are, because people are living everywhere. And it goes on forever. It goes on forever. You are blown away by how many people live in this one spot on earth. The next day, we went to a place called the Tower of Latin America, and it's the highest part of Mexico City. And so our entire AIM class goes up there, and we witness the humanity that is this city. Of what 28 million people look like and smell like and act like. And it makes you feel small. I remember as I was looking out into the city thinking, wow, thank goodness God is here because I'm here. Wow, I'm so proud to be doing God's work here in Mexico City. And I remember believing that I was right. I was doing God's work. I was answering his call. I should be a hero. My name should be on a plaque somewhere. Yeah, it gets worse from here. it gets a lot worse from here. On Wednesday, we decided, we split up the whole AIM class into groups of four or five into our AIM teams, and we went off to small groups throughout Mexico City. So just to give you a perspective, my small group, this is still in Mexico City, was almost 4 to 5 hours away. And it was still within the same city. And so we went to this small group, and I'm thinking it's going to be a house of some kind. Even though people told me it's going to be different, I'm still expecting some sort of resemblance to what I'm used to. And we arrive at this house, and it is a two-story concrete block. And the two stories are divided by a hole in the ceiling, and it has this ladder. And so that's where the grandma and grandpa slept. And so, and the kids and their kids, they all slept on the bottom. There was about 15 people living in this block. And so we had a small group. And at first, this man welcomes us into his house, and he says, "Thank you. But I want you to understand something. God has been working here long before you were born." And it destroyed me. To hear a man in a different language basically say, "God has been here long before you existed. And he will be here long after you leave this place. God is working in Mexico City. God has been working in Mexico City." And when I first heard this, I realized that every question I had been asking up to this point was off. Not by a little, but by a lot. Because I was asking and looking for, I wanted to see, all right, you know, okay, God isn't obviously working, so that must mean he's obviously working through me. So everything I do is proof that God is working. And this man is telling me that God is bigger than me. God is bigger than myself. At the very end, he welcomed all of us and he fed us, which is a miracle. It was awesome. We got fed everywhere we went. And he said, I want to thank you on behalf of the Metro Church of Christ in Mexico City as their elder. I want to welcome you into our family." And I thought, this is what an elder is doing? This is what an elder, and this is, I saw so much God through the actions and words of this man. I realized that I have had this wrong this whole time. But thank goodness I am not the only one. If you have your Bibles, turn over to Luke chapter 2. And we're going to reread this because it's a very important story. And we're going to start in verse 41. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it. But supposing him to be in the group, they went a day's journey. But then they began to search for him among their relatives and acquaintances. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem searching for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress." And I really wish I could have read that question like Mary actually spoke it, but I don't think screeching works through a microphone. Because that's exactly what we would be doing. Have you ever been left at a grocery store by your parents? Do we have any kids that would be willing to admit this? Brooklyn? Adrian? I know your parents are here. Yes, has any of you been left at a grocery store or anywhere by your parents? As a child, what went through your head when you realized that you were lost? Or worse, when you were forgotten? Right? Wouldn't we all say, "This is awesome? This is great. I am free." I've watched Home Alone. I know how it works. Right? Once your parents are gone, that's when you can do whatever you want. No. How many of you felt paralyzed, afraid, worried? I hope my children would be like that. I hope my children wouldn't feel like they've experienced the first freedom. How many of you were angry? Angry at being forgotten by your parents? Now, as a parent, what went through your mind when you realized you forgot your child? Now, this is a place of acceptance and forgiveness, so we can accept the fact that we have forgotten our children places. I'm seeing a lot of this, but I feel like you guys are lying, because I can't be the only one, all right? I cannot be the only one. What went through your mind when you realized that you had lost your child? See, we know exactly what went through Joseph and Mary's mind. Panic. Regret, worry, where is my baby? You see, I'm learning this important truth as a parent that my children will always be my baby. And it doesn't matter how old they get. It doesn't matter that if they were 2, 3, or 5, and I imagine it will continue on to the time they're 10, 15. When they are lost, I want to know where my baby is. I will panic. See, I also believe that this gives us insight into Jesus' upbringing. We see his willingness to learn by listening and asking questions. And I have to assume that Jesus saw this through his parents, that Jesus picked this up through how Joseph and Mary were communicating with each other and communicating with others. This is such an important trait to have when learning about God. See, the Psalms are full of poetry, difficult poetry, about the stillness of God in times of suffering, in times of pain. We see David and the other psalmists talking about God, to be like God, to be still and to be quiet and to listen. Yet they are also full of even more difficult questions, questions people have about the nature of God, about the nature of suffering. How long, O Lord, will you hide your face from me? Why are you downcast, O my soul? What is man that you are mindful of him? We cannot be afraid to ask difficult questions to God. The story of Job is proof to us of a relationship, of a true relationship with God, of someone who is suffering, of someone who is in panic, in fear. And yet Job asks some of the most dangerous questions in the whole Bible. God, who do you think you are? God, what are you doing? God, do you know who I am? Do you know what I've done? I am innocent of this. If I could prove myself before you, if we can build a court and I can put you on the witness stand, I would be able to prove to you how innocent I actually am, that I don't deserve this. And God responds in one of the most harshest ways. Who do you think you are? Do you even know God? Have you ever seen an ostrich? How about this monster I'm describing to you? Have you ever seen that? Let alone try to tame it? Let alone try to make it your friend? Tie a leash around its neck and take it out for a walk? You don't know God. You don't know God. You don't know what he is doing. And yet he never tells Job those were bad questions. He never tells Job to stop asking. You see, her question, Mary's question, though it is simple and honest, comes from an emotionally raw place. Why have you done this to me? What are you doing? How many times have we asked God the same question? Why are you doing this to me? Where have you been? It is so easy to ask this question, never being prepared to be the answer, or never being prepared for the answer in the first place. We want to pinpoint the active work of God, and yet we are blind to him standing next to us. We may pray for our foreign missions, forgetting that God is working here and now through you to achieve miracles on this mission field. Do you believe that God is working in Ventura? Yes, thank you. Do you believe that God is working through you? Yes, because he is. Yet we can constantly ask the same question, where are you? However, we can even consume our Christian walk with asking God where he might be and never intending to be a part of that answer. We can become so short-sighted with our own mission field here that we neglect the work that he is doing around the world. And I want to make this clear. We are not going to Puerto Rico to bring them Jesus. Jesus has been working there long before we were born and will continue his work there long after we die. In the same light, God is working here in Ventura. He has been here long before this church was established and will be here long after we leave this place. We are going because God has called us to go, just as he has called us to be here in Ventura. And we want to be effective agents of God's mission in this world. That is why we are going to Puerto Rico. We are going to answer a call, the same call that you guys are answering here and now, to be here in Ventura, to be his hands and feet, to be his words, to be his son, to be Jesus Christ to people here. And I want you to know that I see this, that Dave sees this, that the elders, that we see God working through this congregation, and it is amazing. But let's see. Let's see how Jesus responds to Mary's line of questioning in Luke chapter 2, in verse 49. And he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my Father's house?" Now, first thing, I don't care if you are the Son of God, that strikes the wrong tone with me. He may be the creator of all things and time, but he's going to get a timeout from me. I would spank Jesus. If he said something like this to me after 3 days of looking for this kid, and I finally ask him, "Where have you been? What are you doing this to me?" And he says, "What'd you expect? I've been here the whole time." It's like, no, that's not what I want to hear. Right? That is not what I want to hear. When the child I'm looking for responds like that, I get aggravated. Yet that's how he responds. Why are you looking for me? As a parent, this seems like an odd question with a lot of really good answers. My first, because you're my child. Because it's my job to look after the people I love. Because I love you. Because I was worried. Because you're my child. You are my responsibility. See, we are getting a tiny glimpse into God's emotional history with mankind. We think we've been on this journey to find God, but it is us who has been hiding from him. Where do we think God is? What do we think he is doing? I want you to turn over to Jeremiah chapter 29. Many of you even have this memorized. I know it's in the Old Testament. It's quite a few flips. In Jeremiah chapter 29, starting in verse 11. I love the sound of Bibles actually turning pages. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for wholeness and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. And then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will hear you. You will seek me and find me. When you seek me with your whole heart, I will be found by you, declares the Lord. And I will restore your fortunes and gather you from all the nations and all the places where I have driven you, declares the Lord. And I will bring you back to the place where I have sent you into exile. See, God was not hiding from Israel. He was not playing some globe-trotting hide-and-seek. He was with them the entire time. He was in their suffering, and through their exaltation and being restored to Israel, God was with them the whole time. This passage wasn't only to remind them of what they're going to get in the distant future, but it was to remind them of what God is trying to do with them in the here and now. To show these people that, yes, in the future, if you want to think that far ahead, I have it planned out. I have restoration in mind for you. I have redemption built into this relationship. But don't forget about what I am doing to you here, what I am doing to you now. Remember Genesis chapter 3, verse 9. One of the most emotional questions in the Bible, and it's asked by God after Adam and Eve have fallen. God walks through the garden and he says, "Where are you?" How do you imagine God said this? With what emotion? With what inflection? Do you imagine a God who is crying as he is asking? Can you lose your child as a mother and hold back the tears as you search for them? Could you? No. As a father looking for your child, could you stop sweating like I'm sweating right now? Could you withhold I don't know what it is. It's the anger and the regret that gets into your voice when you're so upset you can't even string words together in a sentence. Where are you? See, I see a God who is emotional. A God who is looking for somebody that is hiding, somebody that is lost. See, God wasn't the one who left. We abandoned God to enjoy the fruits of our freedom. Listen to Isaiah chapter 59, starting in 1, verse 1. Surely the arm of the Lord is not too short to save, nor his ear too dull to hear. But your iniquities have separated you from God. Your sins have hidden his face from you, so that he will not hear. The truth is that God has been right where he has always planned on being. He is doing the same thing he started in the garden, and you are still the thing God so desperately wants to find. So I plead with you, stop hiding. I plead with you to stop running away. Stop doing whatever it is you're doing that keeps God from working through you. For God to work on you. Stop running away. Well, let's finish out in Luke chapter 2 through 50. And they did not understand the saying that he had spoke to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them. And his mother treasured up all of these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. See, of course, they did not understand this message. From the beginning, man has been mostly clueless about the work of God. For whatever reason, Jesus did not feel the need to explain himself then and there. Instead, he did the most important thing. He submitted to them. At times, we may be clueless to what God is doing to us. Through us or in spite of us, we must remember as we question God to submit to his answer, to submit to his calling. And people will be moved by our willingness to be still and listen and obey. Gardening is a simple thing to do. Being a part of our community is a very simple thing to do. There are so many nonprofits in this community doing those things. It is incredibly simple to be a part of that. But to listen to God, to submit, to obey him as he calls us to go and not only just do, but to love and to listen to what he has to say for us. I encourage you to point your questions to God. Don't look for the places he is working, but submit to him as he works in you. That is my challenge. That is my call for you today. Be that work of God. Allow him to work on you, to work through you, and to be his harvest. Please, will you stand as we continue to worship God?